Well, here we are again, guys, for another exciting episode of True Crime on Easy Street. We're 30 minutes later than normal tonight. We will get into that in a moment.
No, we won't.
Or we will not. Welcome, everybody. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
So Katie and I are just back from South Beach, Miami, Florida. Not together, she and I. Her husband knew about this whole trip. He was on it as well.
Whatever.
Some other co-workers of ours from Easy Street attended the weekend's events, the highlight of which for me was seeing John Mulaney, my favorite stand-up comedian, in concert. Bucket list checked off. I still can't believe that I got to see him live with my eyeballs. It was amazing.
And did you love it so much?
I loved it so much that I texted you and said, holy cow, I love this that much.
Yeah, yes, it was a great night.
The two opening acts were amazing. There were 7,000 people in the venue. Katie, I looked this up just a second ago. It's called the Hard Rock Live at the Seminole Casino in Hollywood, and it holds about 7,000 people. And it turns out that I know this very succinctly because 7,000 people laughing as hard as they possibly can sounds exactly like a jet engine, and that's how we got there. And it was one of the highlights of my life.
That's awesome.
I'm going to cry if we keep talking about it. Let's move on.
Don't tear up tonight,
it was
Scott.
Unbelievable. So we did that this weekend, and now we're back more tan than you are, if you don't mind me saying so.
He's talking about me, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry.
He's pointing at me, Kelly.
Yes.
That I am not as tan as he and Katie, to further rub in the fact that
we just got back from the beach and you did not.
Exactly.
But aren't you going in a couple of weeks probably? I mean, no. Memorial Day is coming up.
No, I'm not going.
Oh.
That's okay.
Well.
Crickets. I'm not bitter or anything.
Just
whatever.
Just another reminder of why I'm so glad that I only see you on Mondays.
No, I'm glad you guys had a great time. You guys do look really, really tan.
Well,
you have like
you.
This golden bronze look.
Yeah, well, you don't want to see the red in this area around my stomach where I forgot to spray the 30 sunblock. So,
oh, yeah.
I was about to say, I don't know about that. Scott Wright walked around the beach with a button-up shirt on. I have pictures to prove it.
I had it rolled up at the sleeves. I was trying to look cool. It was my beach outfit.
Did you have your cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve?
Damn it. No. That's the one
then
thing I forgot,
not,
Jim Croce. My bad.
Yeah, then you were not cool. I'm just kidding. I don't condone smoking.
Well, I've never been cool, so that's you're two for two on that one. All right, so let's get to what we're here for today. We've giggled and dickered around for 10 minutes. People want to hear the podcast, not what we did last weekend on vacation.
What in the world does that mean?
What do you mean?
What does dickered around?
Not what you think it means, apparently, based on the look on your face, Kelly
what
Turner.
Did you just say?
Clean out your mind, woman.
I'm not. I've never heard that word.
Dickered?
Never.
Never.
Ask your husband about it.
I feel like I should be British. Is it British?
I don't know. Maybe. No, that's shepherd's pie. You're thinking about something completely different.
All right. Got it. I'll shut up.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Keep going. So we're going to do the Murdoch part 3 of 4 tonight.
Yes,
and,
we are.
Kelly is in the big chair. She's going to tell us about really the thing that was would it be fair to say this was the first domino that fell in
yes.
what became the unraveling of the yes. Murdoch family?
Yes, that is very fair to say.
Lead on.
This is the incident that's going to put them on the map, mm-hmm. so to speak, as far as getting some interest from local investigators, local newspapers, local, you know, and then they're, as this continues to unfold, they're going to become widely known.
Not in
nationally.
A good way.
Nationally. Yeah. Yes. Yes. They're going to become infamous based on what's going to happen tonight. We've already talked about the Stephen Smith case. We've talked about Gloria Satterfield. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about the Mallory Beach incident. Now, Mallory Beach is a person. I said that almost like it was a beach.
Yeah, right.
But that's her last name.
Well, if you are new, that might sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this boat crash is what is going to sort of, like you said, this is the domino, the first one that fell.
Yeah.
And then it's going to start bringing in all of this.
And the things that we've talked about so far, and Kelly chose to approach this from a completely different direction. And I love the way that you chose to do this, because instead of beginning with the first domino, we began we did the timeline.
We did a timeline.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think this is unique in the way that we've done it.
Yes. And, in most podcasts that you listen to about the Murdochs, they're going to start with Mallory Beach. Mm-hmm. So here we are, Murdoch May, episode, is this episode 20?
Of our season?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, season I think
two,
so.
Episode mm-hmm. 20.
I think so.
But it's the third episode, part three of the Murdoch murders. So here we go. If you have not listened to season two, episodes 18 and 19, you need to pause this episode here and go back and listen. And then we'll be here when
we'll
you get
right
ready.
We'll be right here when mm-hmm. you get back.
Because especially in episode 18, in the Stephen Smith episode, we give a nice background of the Murdoch family. So at least go back and get that part to give you an understanding of how the Murdochs came into power in South Carolina and why people are afraid of them in the Lowcountry.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair mm-hmm. brief description.
All right, so now here we go. We are in the Lowcountry, as I said, of South Carolina. On February the 23rd, 2019, at 6:36 p.m., Paul Murdoch took his family's boat, which is a 17-foot Sea Hunt center console powerboat, out for a night of partying with friends on the Beaufort River.
And so for those of us who are from a lake place, water place.
Mm-hmm. 17-foot
boat is not a very
it's a small
large boat.
Boat.
Yeah.
Not a lot of seating.
Especially for six people. I mean, mm-hmm. that's designed for fishing. Mm-hmm. You know, we live on the lake here in Weiss Lake in Northeast Alabama. So a lot of us are used to the lake life, as it were.
Yes.
But most of us here have pontoon boats, and it's just it's a big couch with a steering wheel in the middle.
Mm-hmm. I think your standard pontoon boat's going to run you anywhere from 20 to 24
yeah.
feet.
And seating for 10 or 12. So very comfortable for this sort of excursion. But this little boat that they chose to use, not so much.
No. And the fact that it is a center console as well, there's even less seats. Because as you said, it's more for fishing.
Yeah. Right?
But this is the Murdoch family boat. And Paul Murdoch, who is the youngest son of Alec and Maggie Murdoch, is 19 years old at the time, and he's going to take this boat out and for a night of partying with his friends. And they're in Beaufort County on the Beaufort River there. There are three couples that are on board of this boat, Paul and his girlfriend, Morgan Doughty, Miley Altman and her boyfriend, Connor Cook, and Connor's cousin, Anthony Cook, and his girlfriend, Mallory Beach. So these are the three, I would say teenagers. They're all under 21. Paul is 19. I think the oldest one on the boat might be Anthony, who's age 20. But don't quote me on that, but yeah. I believe he is
but,
the
I
oldest.
Mean, six college kids.
Yeah, he's the oldest.
Yeah. And they're all under age to drink.
But finally trusted with the family boat to go out and enjoy themselves on their own.
Paul has been using this boat okay. for a long time.
Gotcha.
They have pretty much let Paul do whatever Paul wants to do.
Okay.
So as I said, the six passengers were all underage. Paul is going to use his brother Buster's ID to buy alcohol at a local gas station at 5:30 the night before it began. And there's footage at the gas station that you can see this, and you can see him at the counter when he buys the alcohol, and you can see him walk out and you see the vehicle with the boat attached, and you see him hold up his cases of beer, like
in a celebratory fashion. Yeah, look what I've got.
Look what I bought. You know, look, everybody here, we've been 19 before. You know, we can relate to this.
Certainly.
Certainly nothing too nefarious about that, other than the fact that he just broke the law.
Yeah.
I can promise you that no gas station attendant ever served me alcohol underage. But to my point, they shouldn't have served Paul either, because he doesn't look very old.
And he doesn't, I mean, he's Buster's brother, but he's a good bit shorter
and
a lot thinner than Buster.
But that didn't
keep
him.
And he's 3 years younger.
But it didn't keep him from using his older brother's.
No, but they took the ID, they looked at it, they sold him the alcohol. And as I understand, I heard one report say that a couple of other members of the group had used fake IDs as well and purchased some alcohol too. But we're just focusing on Paul, and that is because ultimately, this is the Murdoch family boat, and Paul's the one that's going to take it out.
Sure.
So he drove the boat from what locals call Murdoch Island, which is one of their, they have a home there on this, in this little private area. So they leave from Murdoch Island and they go to a second location, to an oyster roast or an oyster bake on Pawkee Island. I may be saying that wrong, as the locals say it. So if I am, I apologize.
That's going to get us a 3-star review if you said it wrong.
I think it's Pawkee Island. And the GPS data recovered from the boat confirms that they docked about 8 p.m. and they stayed at the party until around midnight. Now, during this party, there are a lot of adults at the party, too. In fact, Paul's uncle, Randy Murdoch, is there as well. And I'm not sure if his other uncle was there, but I know for a fact Randy Murdoch admitted to being at the party. So there were adults and there were college age kids there. It's an oyster bake. You know, we're not so unfamiliar with parties like that on the lake here.
We're not. It wouldn't be oysters here, but it would be, crappie or bass.
We would do a fish fry, or we would do a low country boil, right, or something like that we would do here. And you have people of all ages at the lake lot, and they're, you know, enjoying the food. But as the party continues, what the kids are doing is they're going, they're leaving the party. They're going to the boat where they're getting their drinks from their cooler, and they're drinking it, probably putting it in a solo cup or drinking it there on the boat and coming back. So they get drunk at the party, or Paul starts to, for sure. Now, when they leave the party at midnight, Paul and Connor Cook want to go into town and actually go to a bar and get some shots.
And that's something you can do from the boat, I found out today.
Yes, you can take the boat so they can get out onto the water and they can actually go into, they can drive through the body of water there and go dock it and go, and you're right there.
Short walk
town.
And you're at, I forgot the name of the place.
The name of the bar is Luther's Rare and Well Done.
Yeah.
And there's surveillance video from the bar and from the dock where they are. And you can see them coming off of the boat. You can see them, you know, coming back onto the boat. But their footage there does confirm that they are there at Luther's. Paul and Connor get in with fake IDs. They ask if they can bring their friends. And they say, no, they're not 21, you know. And the bouncer did submit a written statement saying that he did look at the IDs and it said 21. And so they were allowed in. So because the friends can't join them, they do each do 2 shots each very quickly.
Yeah, that doesn't take long. No. If you've never done a shot before, as long as you can keep it down, it doesn't take long.
And so it doesn't for them as well. And so they rejoin their friends. That the rest of the members of the boat kind of went to a nearby park and just kind of hung out there in town. And then they rejoin their friends about 1:15. And you can see the camera footage on the dock captured of the 6 friends as they're walking down the dock and they're boarding the boat. And you see, you see that Paul is kind of, in my opinion, looking at the footage, it looks like he's staggering.
I would say he is the drunkest of the 6.
Yes, because the rest of them can at least walk straight to get onto the boat, and he's kind of swaying, taking a few extra steps.
Well, and they're all speaking to each other and laughing and having a good time, and he just seems like he is totally concentrated on getting back to the boat. Mm-hmm. Like, it's taking all of the concentration that he has left to do that.
Yes. So they get back on the boat, and this is where it just really goes south. This footage of Mallory Beach walking along that dock and getting back onto the boat is the last time we see her alive. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of goes downhill from there. They end up crashing into a bridge just shortly after 2:20 a.m.
Yeah, it's called a dolphin. It's like 3 power poles that are sunk in the water. There's 8 or 10 feet exposed, and they're all leaned together to remind you, hey, don't drive here. This is there's a bridge right behind you. Go to the left of this and don't hit it.
They
or
call
to the
it
right.
like a pylon.
Yeah,
and so it's shortly after 2:20. So from 1:15 when they get back on the boat to 2:20, we have to understand what happened, we have to rely on the testimony, the interviews from the individuals on the boat. We have to rely on things that are going to come up in court hearings that we will address all of this. So I'm saying all this not to bait you and say, "Ooh, we're going to get to that." I'm saying all this to say the following information comes from these interviews and these, what's the word I'm trying to say?
Depositions.
Katie? Depositions.
Yeah, depositions.
Yeah. Thank you. So this is where we get this information. So according to those on the boat, after they get onto the boat from this dock about 1:15 and get out into the water, this is when things really go south. Paul is very, very drunk, according to the passengers. He's driving. At one point, he's just doing donuts in the boat, just around. And one thing that I have not told you, it's getting, it's obviously dark at 1:15 a.m., but it's also very foggy.
Okay.
At night. And this boat does not have a light on it.
Oh, wow.
Well, there are no lights on the boat. There are no running lights.
They don't
lights.
Work. If, I mean, I assume it was bought from the dealership with lights, but they're not working.
And they are using a flashlight to light their way.
Very dangerous.
As they drive through the dark fog. Mm-hmm. And so the reason that Paul starts doing donuts and he starts getting, you know, agitated is because, according to the passengers on the boat, Anthony Cook and Connor Cook both offer to drive because Paul is wasted.
Not doing it well.
No. And so Anthony offers several times, "Hey, dude, will you let me drive? You know, it was scaring Mallory." Mallory was Anthony's girlfriend. She was terrified. They were, you know, sitting on the boat. She was sitting in his lap. He was speeding up very fast, and then he would let go. You know, if you know how to operate a boat, the gas is a handle, and you push it forward to go. But when you let it off, I mean, it slows down.
Yeah, it slowly goes back to idle speed.
But it's very hard to steer at that point.
That's true.
It's easier to steer when you're kind of going, you know,
when the throttle is engaged.
Yes, yes. And so he's just stopping. And so his girlfriend is towards the front of the boat, and she's, you know, telling him, "Why don't you let someone else drive?" And so he then lets go of the throttle, and he runs up to the front of the boat, and he starts yelling and cussing at her, and she tries to push him away, and he hits her, and then he spits on her and calls her all kinds of names. So he's belligerent at this point. And when he is stepping away from the wheel and stops operating the boat, you know, to go do this or to go do something else or yell at somebody else, Connor will then steady the boat. He will grab the wheel and he will try to steady it from time to time. But then Paul goes back and he starts again. And so they're driving near an area called Archer's Creek. And there is the bridge at Archer's Creek. And that's how they refer to it, the bridge. It is the only bridge on Archer's Creek, which is the way... when you leave the middle of town by water, you use Archer's Creek to get back to where the Murdochs have their private home on Murdoch Island.
Mm-hmm.
So you
go just where they were going to spend the night, right?
Yes.
The six of them were going to spend the night together at this.
I'm not sure if that was the plan, but they had to take the boat back. I'm sure all of their vehicles and everything were there.
That makes sense.
Where they got on the boat. So when they're going through Archer's Creek, they hit the dolphin that you were talking about, which is right in front of the bridge.
Yeah.
They hit that going 29 miles an hour. Now, that doesn't sound fast, especially if you're used to driving a vehicle. But if you've ever been in a boat
that's
going
boat.
29 miles an
right,
hour.
Katie, that's pretty fast on a boat.
You think about if you were going 29 miles an hour on a boat and you hit something, I mean, just that's not going to move.
No.
I mean, bam, it actually, when they hit the boat, When the boat hit that, there was a 6-foot gash towards the back of the boat. The boat actually came apart in places. Pretty much. Yes. Yeah. And it threw several of the passengers onto the floor of the boat. And it threw out Paul, Anthony, and Mallory. Now, Paul and Anthony were able to swim to the shoreline and get onto the shore.
They didn't hit anything while they were flying through the air, I'm guessing.
Mallory cannot be found at this time. Mm-hmm. They're yelling, they're screaming, trying to find Mallory. And the 911 call was released where Connor calls 911. And Connor sounds very calm in this 911 call. But what we later learn is his jaw is broken.
Oh, yeah.
So he's carefully trying to speak to let them know.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have rather screamed at that point, but he couldn't.
Yes, and he keeps saying, we're on a boat.
We were in a boat crash.
Yeah. And the 911 operator has trouble hearing them at first, and then finally figures out.
That's a hard call to listen to.
And they were very hard to find because there's fog. They first sent the first responders to the wrong place. They're a little bit confused as to their location. But another thing that the people in the boat are going to tell investigators is that when they're talking about Paul's actions and his behavior that night, they're gonna talk about Timmy being out. Now, Paul Murdoch has an alter ego when he drinks. And he was given this alter ego when he was about 16 years old, when he got really, really drunk one night and Timmy came out. And Timmy, this alter ego Timmy, gets very destructive. He's belligerent. He's, you know, very angry, very agitated. And he has these weird movements where he stretches his arms way out, both of them, and he spreads his fingers out really, really far, and his eyes get really big, and he's just belligerent.
Probably started out as a joke amongst his friends.
His friends did coin it, but he becomes very destructive, and so Timmy was out that night is what they can be heard saying in their interviews with investigators, and they talk about how he behaves, and that's when he's doing donuts and he's driving just all over the place, and then
physically assaulting his girlfriend.
Physically assaulting his girlfriend and then yelling at anybody else that's telling him he doesn't need to be driving and saying things like, this is my effing boat, I'm going to drive it. You know, if anybody's driving this boat, it's going to be me. All of this testimony is told by the people who were in the boat and who survived and who were interviewed by investigators. And on the scene at the shoreline, Anthony Cook tells the officer that he's sitting with that Paul was driving the boat.
And that is correct.
You can watch all of this footage, this dash cam footage. Just a quick Google will get you these videos, and you can see where Anthony is sitting in the police car with the officer, and the officer's, you know, trying to keep him calm, and he's like, you know, everything's gonna be okay. Paul Murdoch comes by wearing only his boxers. At some point in time before the crash, he's taken off every bit of his clothes except his boxers. And this is February.
Yeah, it was 59 degrees that night, and they were going 29 miles an hour. That's cold, people.
Yes.
And I think that was another Timmy characteristic. I think
Timmy takes his clothes off. So there we go. And so he comes walking by, and you can see he's clearly in his boxer shorts, and Anthony Cook goes nuts. He starts yelling and screaming at Paul, and he says, that MF-er deserves to rot in jail. And he's screaming. Apparently, Paul smiles at him. And he kind of does. You can see it in the video. And Anthony starts yelling at him, and he's like, this is not funny. You know, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but he just starts yelling at him, and he says, my girlfriend is gone and you think this is funny.
Right.
So at this point in time, it's been 30 minutes and it's starting to register with Anthony.
Yeah.
We have not found Mallory. and it's been 30 minutes.
Yeah, there's a part of the call where, or the, I think it's the dash cam footage, or it's the audio, really. It's not even a video that you can see, or at least I didn't see it. I heard it. But he says at one point when he starts to realize what's going on or what has happened, the deputy who is kind of keeping an eye on him says something to him, and he says, wait, do you mean to tell me that she's laying in the bottom of the river? It's like, dang, she's been gone for 30 minutes. We're probably not going to find her alive.
No. And they're trying to find her. The rescue, the first responders are there. They're doing everything that they can. They're trying. And Paul, you've got Anthony, Connor, you got Miley, and Morgan. And they're all crying, and they're upset, and they're worried about Mallory, and they're, you know, huddled
and they're
together.
They're screaming Mallory's name into the night.
Yes, they're screaming, trying to get, you can hear that. It's so eerie, too, ugh, on the 911 call. You can hear them screaming for her. And Paul's walking around trying to get a phone because he keeps saying he's got to call his granddad.
Yeah.
I got to call my granddad. And you can hear an exchange he has with an officer where he asks the officer, can I borrow your phone? And you can tell by the way he's talking that he is wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And the officer even says, you dropped your phone back there. You have a phone. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I dropped my phone. And then you can see where he's saying, go back over there and get in. And he's like, oh, I'm not surprised. But the way he's slurring his words. He's worried about calling his granddad. Now, remember when we gave you the history of the Murdochs, granddad is Randolph III, who recently was a solicitor there. You know, remember we told you a Murdoch was a solicitor, which is South Carolina's version of a district attorney. And Murdoch was there since it was created all the way to 2006. Now, this is 2019, but the individual who is the current solicitor is what I have heard in interviews and other podcasts as a Murdoch ally. He's very Murdoch friendly.
I think Alec Murdoch was a volunteer solicitor for the elected solicitor, like, or a volunteer prosecutor.
Yes.
If they needed somebody to step in and prosecute a case,
I'm
sure he got compensated.
And
for
he
that.
Was still in that role at this time in 2019. Mm-hmm. Alec Murdoch was. So he's wanting to call Randolph III. And so eventually everyone, with the exception of Mallory is still missing. Everybody gets to the hospital. And we get to the hospital, and the staff, of course, they go, each individual's assigned to their own room there at the hospital. They are at the Beaufort County Hospital. And they're getting examined by the nurses and the doctors there, and some have serious injuries. And some even require surgery. Some do not have serious injuries. Paul Murdoch is one of those who does not have a serious injury. However, in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, they had to strap him down. He's belligerent at this time. And he is, Paul's nurse reported that he was, quote, grossly intoxicated and belligerent. Now, the hospital staff, because of Paul's behavior, they're going to do a blood test on him. They're going to do an alcohol level test on him because they can't decide if he's acting this way because he's so drunk or if he has a head injury.
Or if he's just a terrible person.
They're trying to figure out, well, they're thinking,
I think head injury.
Head injury
point.
Because he's so belligerent. And so they do an alcohol test. This is 2 hours after the accident. And according to WRDW, his alcohol level was 0.286.
That's like 3.5 times drunk in anywhere in the United States. 0.08 will get you behind bars.
And this is 2 hours after the accident.
Yikes.
Now, what's interesting to note, this is the first time he was tested. He was not tested on the scene. All of that law enforcement around there, him walking around in his boxer shorts, slurring and stumbling, talking directly to officers, and no one has done an alcohol test on this guy, and Anthony Cook, and I know at least one other of the individuals there at the scene has said he was driving the boat. Mm-hmm. There's no question at that moment who was driving the boat.
Where the responsibility lies.
Right, right.
Well, he wasn't even asked to do a field sobriety test. Like,
no.
Because, you know, you can refuse one, but mm-hmm. One was never even requested of him.
I saw one report where Connor was actually, they asked him to do one and he refused.
Right.
So he at least knew enough to refuse it. Mm-hmm. But he probably said, I wasn't driving the boat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but.
You take one, officer.
He refused it.
Yeah.
I don't know the dialogue exchange, but there was a report that he was asked to do one and he refused.
Yeah, the report I saw said that one officer stated that he told another officer to administer a test on both Paul and Connor, and he only asked Connor and Connor refused. And then that same officer says, no, if I was asked to have done a test, I would have done it on whoever I was asked to do it on. So it's a bunch of back and forth about that.
Bunch of back and forth. So enter Alec Murdoch and Randolph III to the hospital.
So Grandpa has arrived.
Grandpa and Dad has arrived.
Okay.
And they immediately go into Paul's room and they do not talk to anybody.
Lawyer mode.
Do not talk to anybody. Then Alec Murdoch was, the staff of the hospital reported that they were having to keep him out of the other kids' rooms. He was trying to get in to the rooms of the other teenagers to tell them not to talk. We'll get you a lawyer. Don't talk. Don't say anything about who's driving. Everybody be quiet. And Katie, do you want to tell us what he does to Connor as far as how he's telling Connor about how to be quiet and I'll get you a lawyer and all of this?
Yes, he goes into Connor's room. Like I said, like Kelly said, he's trying to go in everyone's room. Like when Morgan's being interviewed by the police, he literally just walks in and has to be escorted out of her room. Mm-hmm. And he goes in Connor's room and he tells Connor, you know, you don't tell anybody who was driving. You know, we don't, you know, there's been a lot of things said tonight and it's best if you keep your mouth shut because it's going to look bad on you too. We're going to get you a lawyer.
We're going to get you a lawyer that's going to help you. Would anybody like to guess who that lawyer was that he suggested for Connor Cook?
Was it Corey Fleming?
Ding, ding, ding.
Was it really?
Ding,
that was a stone cold guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right.
It was Corey Fleming.
Wow.
Remember, if you don't know who Corey Fleming is, you need to listen to our previous episode.
Mm-hmm. Stop now. Go back. We'll be right here.
Yeah, we'll wait for you. So it will get you all introduced to Corey Fleming. So he's trying to, he's actually approaching Connor as Connor is being rolled in a wheelchair in to get an x-ray on his jaw. Remember I said his jaw is
right
dislocated. Yeah. And
he bashed into something in the boat when the boat struck.
Yes, because
the,
he ended up being in the floor of the boat. So he's trying to stop them and they're having to say, sir, you've got to get out of the way. We're taking this patient to have x-rays and ultimately surgery, you know.
Right.
Move.
Yeah.
So this is, at this point, Paul's not able to be interviewed by anybody because Granddad and Dad are there. Which, Katie, how common is this? If you call your lawyer.
Oh, yeah. No.
They're going to come in and tell you to be quiet?
I wouldn't want my kid talking to law enforcement if like without me there. Like that,
absolutely not.
I don't think that that's sketchy. I mean, it's sketchy because of who they are. But now, they got to Paul before Alec and Granddad got there. Like they law enforcement got to speak to him for a minute.
And what did he say?
He said they asked him if he was driving. He said, I was not driving. And then he says, what does it matter who was driving? What if I had been driving? What does it matter?
Oh.
Well, that seems like a hole in his whole theory that mm-hmm. I mean I can answer that.
Yes. And in some of the depositions, and guys, you guys tell me if I get this wrong, in Connor's deposition, he is the one who overhears Alex saying, She's gone. Don't worry about her.
Yes. I heard that at some point.
He made those statements right. in the hospital.
On the phone, I think.
On the phone with someone. And he says, she's gone. Don't worry about her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, if you needed to know, if you haven't yet figured out that we're dealing with a family that we think may be inhabited by at least one cold-hearted snake, that may be the one thing that could push you to the other side of the fence if you're not already there, because that seems... Mm-hmm. That seems pretty shitty.
Exactly. Now, Dr. Mark Mercer confirmed to investigators that Paul was the most intoxicated and least cooperative of anyone of the group there. And after looking at the boat, there were 49 bottles and cans of alcohol on board. 27 were empty.
And that's, you got to figure that's not all of the... I mean, we could go back and do the math and look at that video footage from the Parker's convenience store. And there was White Claw, there was Michelob Ultra, and there was Natural Light. Or I forget exactly what the three different containers, the mm-hmm. cardboard containers of alcohol that Paul set up on the counter. But mm-hmm. you got there's 12, 20. There had to be at least 30 or 40 in there. Mm-hmm. And so they got some more from somewhere else. Maybe the boat was already full of beer. No,
someone else with the group was able to buy. I mean, I don't know who it was, but okay. I understand that more than just Paul had a fake ID.
Got it.
Well, and they took the shots at the bar. And if you've ever, you know, taken two shots very quickly back to back, I mean, that can really go to your head. And for him to still have that blood alcohol level that many hours after the crash, after he's been through a trauma, I mean, he's still acting like this. You're thrown into ice cold water in the middle of the night and you've got a friend missing. That sobers you up pretty quick.
Mm. Yeah.
And for him to still be as belligerent as he was tells you how belligerent how drunk he had to have been.
And what that boat ride might have been like for anybody who was on it, if he was, you know, donuts and arguing.
It's awful
and
to think about how
slapping.
Terrified that they were. But if you go and you watch the 2020, you can find it on Hulu. 2020 did an episode devoted to the Murdochs.
It's season 44, episode 11. I watched it again today.
And you see the interviews
with
these kids. You know that they were terrified on this boat. And at one point in time, Mallory was so scared, and Anthony was too, that he told Paul, look, you won't let me drive, just stop the boat and we'll get off. Mm-hmm. They just asked to just get off the boat, and he would not stop what he was doing. So it was very bad. And the fact that his alcohol level was 0.28 is very telling, especially, you know, 2 hours after the crash. So as we talked about, you know, Alec Murdoch's behavior attracted a lot of attention after the crash, and the way that he was, you know, moving about the hospital and trying to get everybody to be quiet. And
let me ask your guys' opinion about this. It seems to me if there was any sort of a hole in Alec Murdoch's theory about how to get my son out of this thing that he might have gotten himself into, it seems like walking into a crowded hospital and elbowing your way around the hallways leaves a trail of evidence. Evidence is the wrong word. A trail of suspicion.
What they're trying to do is
Oh, I know what they're trying to do,
they're
doing it in front of doctors and nurses and other people who don't give a shit about your legal situation. They're just trying to help these kids and get them fixed and, hey, get the hell out of the way, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And they heard everything they said, and they told everybody everything that they heard him say.
Yep, and they're trying to make the waters more murky, so to speak. They're mm-hmm. trying to cause confusion about who was actually driving when the crash happened. And part of that, as you remember when I told you previously, Paul would be driving and he would be, you know, pushing the gas, and then he would let off and he would step away from the wheel and Connor would grab the wheel.
Yeah, apparently that turned into an excuse.
It did. And that turned
into the Murdoch family.
That turned into, well, we don't know who actually had a hold of the wheel when this crash happened because both of them were, you know, and so what they do is allegedly is they get Connor hooked up with Corey Fleming, who is then going to, you know, make sure that Connor is quiet. And then they're going to continue that confusion. And then it dawns on Connor and his family after a certain amount of time that they're trying to set him up. They're getting him to be quiet, and then they're changing the narrative.
Yeah, this
they're
Fleming
not
character.
Being quiet.
Yeah,
they're changing the narrative, and they're trying to turn it around on Connor. And that's when Connor fires Corey Fleming. And actually, does he still have a lawsuit against Corey Fleming today?
Yeah, he has a civil suit active as of now because of this tampering with, or this alleged tampering with the investigation. Mm-hmm. And there's apparently evidence missing, some obstruction of justice happening.
They never get Paul's phone. They get a search warrant for Mallory's phone, Mallory's Apple Watch. They never get Paul's phone. He's never given a field sobriety test.
Well, there's some discrepancies in the police reports that get filed after they all climb in up onto the bank.
Yes. In one because police report, they write they don't know who was driving.
Yes. When it that's is where
very,
I'm going with that.
It's very clear from the dash cam footage that the people who survived the crash say Paul was driving.
Right.
When we hit
and certainly was
bridge.
Responsible for the dangerous way that boat was being operated in the 30 or 45 minutes, whatever you said it was 1:30 and then 2:10 when the
it
crash
was
happened.
1:15 and then the crash, the 911 call came in about 2:20.
Okay. So figure at least an hour. It took them a little time to climb up or, you know, to get out and get acclimated. And I guess I still don't know why some of those phones worked. Maybe I just have an old model of iPhone because if I even lay mine on the counter beside the sink, mm-hmm. it doesn't work for a day and a half.
Well, and Connor's the one who called, so he actually was never thrown into
okay,
the
that's,
water.
Then there you go. Okay, that's mm-hmm. it. But anyway, there's just some discrepancies about those the statements that you can hear on the audio from that dash cam footage.
Yes.
That just does not jive with what some of those officers turned in later as their official reports. And I'm sure, look, a lot of confusion, people running everywhere. Maybe you don't remember every single word that was said, but you had the dash cam.
Well,
footage.
In fact, the officer
would
that,
you go back and listen to that?
Yeah, the officer that was that had Anthony Cook in his vehicle, and who said Anthony told me that Paul was driving the boat. He was fired.
Right. Not long after that.
No.
Yeah, for alleged drug use. That
alleged
was
drug use.
Never proven.
Never prosecuted. Mm-mm. They just said sorry.
They dropped it. Yeah.
Yeah. They dropped it. They just got him. If you believe in conspiracy theories, and I'm not saying that I don't, but if you believe in them and you have been hanging out with this Murdoch thing for a while, like we have, it starts to sound like something nefarious was happening there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there have been 3 law enforcement officers called into question.
Because there was 4 at the scene. There's a Austin Pritchard, Michael Brox, Stephen Domino, and John Keener.
And Stephen Domino is the one who has been fired.
Yes.
Because he is the one who said, mm-hmm. Anthony said Paul was driving the boat.
Yes, because they were, Anthony and was in the car with Austin Pritchard when they had that full long conversation. And it was Stephen Domino's car with mm-hmm. the dash cam footage that okay. you famously see in this case. And so he was like, yeah, he told it to me.
He does say it. I've heard it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said it directly to me, and then here he is saying it again to Pritchard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That didn't make it into the evidence locker mm-mm. somehow, some way.
Nope. Now, Mallory Beach's body was recovered on March the 3rd, 2019, 8 days after this crash. She was found 5 miles from the crash, and I believe her death was actually ruled, it was blunt force trauma to the head.
Right, which means it knocked her unconscious and she drowned.
Yes, mm-hmm. because she could not, she was out.
Right.
And so I believe there were some fishermen who found her.
Two men.
Near a marsh, like I said, about 5 miles from the crash. And so the death of Mallory Beach is what started the investigations into the Murdoch family.
And that's why this is episode 3 instead of episode 1, because normally, like we've talked about, this is generally the first episode in the Murdoch family tragedy, but we approached it from a different angle because the first 2 episodes of our podcast about this, nobody knew about this, about those, or at least made any sort of connection until this episode happened at that bridge. And then
investigators started looking into
starts to unravel.
Looking into the Murdoch family, looking into all of these past events, they that's when you start hearing the names Stephen Smith, Gloria Satterfield, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. It starts with Mallory Beach. And so I'm going to turn it over to Katie here to give us more on the court and trial and all of those things that come, obviously, after all of this chaos.
She's our legal expert. Who else would do it?
Well, it takes 2 whole months before any charges are ever brought against anyone in this case. And Paul Murdoch is finally indicted on felony BUI charges. BUI is boating under the influence, for those who don't know. He is never booked or jailed in this incident. When a formal mugshot of his was requested, the picture that was sent is a photo of him in a dress shirt standing in a courthouse hallway taken on an iPhone.
That's highly unusual, isn't it?
It is highly unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. When I see a mediocre journalist that I am, when I check out the local arrest files here in Cherokee County, generally they're wearing like a green and white striped shirt that you wouldn't want to wear anywhere else.
Or an orange suit.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're standing in a jail.
Yeah,
for one.
Yeah. And there's a height bar mm-hmm. behind you and yes. it's gray cinder blocks. It just looks like jail because that's where it is.
And they're holding the board that has
the letter board with your number on it.
Mm-hmm. None of this for Paul Murdoch.
No. And he is ordered in this indictment trial to stay within a 5-county radius of the county that they're in. Later on, his attorneys, they think this is too much and they want this restriction taken away.
Wow. So 5 counties is too confined.
Too confined. Really? They want him to be in the whole state.
Oh, so he can just move about the entire state.
He's also not ordered to wear an alcohol monitor, which is not
pretty standard.
Yes.
Yeah. After this. Yeah.
Yeah. No alcoholmonitor is required on Paul Murdoch. And like I said, he's just ordered to stay within his 5-county radius. Those restrictions stay put. But not too long after this, all the charges against Paul are dropped.
Dropped?
They're all formally dropped against Paul Murdoch. And these charges are dropped because on June 7th, 2021, Maggie Murdoch and Paul Murdoch are found shot to death in their Moselle home. And ladies and gentlemen, we have one more week on the Murdochs. And
Are you cliffhanging me right now?
Yep, that's it. They were found.
I'd rather be Cliff Clavened than Cliff Hung.
Well, they are found murdered. Alec calls 911 on June the 7th, 2021. We'll get all into that next week.
Charges are dropped because you cannot have criminal charges against a person who is no longer alive.
Now that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't hate cliffhangers, go to your streaming platform of choice and give us a 5-star review. If you don't like them, then we don't want to hear about it. Don't forget to check out our new website. It's truecrimeoneasystreet.com. We've got cards reminding you about our new podcast scattered all around the Southeast. We'll get into that next week. And what else you guys want to talk about?
Nothing. Just hang with us for one more week of Murdoch May, and then we'll...
What are we going to do after that? Can I tell?
No, you cannot.
I knew you weren't going to let me tell it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening again. We'll be back next week. Good night, everybody.